Turn to Hebrews chapter number 11, and we'll begin reading in verse 24 down through verse 27. We began the other night with the thought of Egypt, expressing it this way: Egypt. What in the world are we doing here? And I'm sure as the children of Israel, especially the young'uns as they were birthed and began to grow and heard the stories about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph, and all the glorious promises and all that, then they looked around. It just didn't add up. I mean, they were slaves. They were in bondage. They had taskmasters. They were working with brick and mortar. And it seemed as though it was an unending event in their lives. And the twain didn't seem to come together in life's experience. And I'm sure that they expressed that. Well, if we're God's children, what in the world are we doing in a mess like this? And I'm sure that if you've been saved any length of time, you've had that same feeling. Well, you know, why, Lord, this mess? Why this circumstance? Why this situation? And, of course, we preached on the reality of Egypt. And I hate to be cold and indifferent, but that's just life. That's where we're at. That's all that really Egypt can offer. It's a place of history, and most of it's repetitious. It's a place where they use those strong terms such as bitterness and burdens, afflictions and sorrows and groanings. And we've heard that tonight in these prayer requests that have gone on and gone up before the Lord. There's some hurt in this world, but I'm glad to report to you that there is some hope.
Yes, it is.
There is some hope. God gave a promise. And I want you to know God's promise was given and true long before you got here. It's been sure since you've been here. And it'll be sure through the end. That promise that the Lord would send them down there, stay 430 years. But Joseph said, whatever you do, don't leave my bones down here. God's pulling you out of here. We got a promise. And my, how that makes a difference. To know that there's a hope beyond the hurt and the history.
Yes.
And that God is taking us somewhere amidst our experiences in this world that we face. Then we preached last night on the reason of Egypt. The reason. And of course there we tried to see how that the Lord is working on us individually. This is the fire that purifies the gold. That's what this is all about. This is how our faith is tested. This is where it all comes out. And God is raising us up in some things that He wants to develop in us in this world. As He raises up within us fear and faith and features and feelings and things of that nature. He's got a city prepared for us. He's got a place prepared, but He's got to prepare the people for the place. And this is where it all happens. And it doesn't happen in Disney World, though some of it can happen there. Or, you know, in the luxuries of life, it happens in this world. But that's why God's got us here. He's working. He's still working on me. He's still working on you. He's raising up some things in us. It's not so much that He's working on. He's not here to work on this world and improve it. There's nothing to be improved. But He is here by the power of His Spirit to work on me and you. To purify us and get us ready for that purifying hope that only He can develop within His children. And also, He's redeeming some things. As we notice that unfolding plan of redemption in Egypt, the shedding of the blood put on the doorposts and so on. He's redeeming. Did a redeeming work in this world. And thank God it was in this world, in a little old place, in one little old spot, in God's great big universe, that I found this redemption, and redemption found me. So I'm glad. I was talking to a lady one day whose mother had been molested, and as a result of that, she was born. And oddly enough, she's 50 years old and bitter because somebody molested her mama. I said, wait a minute. I know it's not good what happened to your mama. But let's look on the other side of it. You're here, aren't you? You are alive. And I know that we can look back and get real bitter over a lot of things, but thank God I'm here. And I was saved here in this old world, so I really don't have anything to complain about. But tonight I want to move a step further, and I want to read these verses. And I want to preach, here's the thought. I want to preach on the who that is the Him as far as this world is concerned. And for sake of alliteration, I'm preaching on the revelation of Egypt. What it is that God wants us to see in Egypt. What is He trying to show us in Egypt? And what is it that if we see it in this world, it will sustain us while we're here? That's vital and important. What are we looking at? What are we focusing on? What are we thinking about? What is it that controls our minds? What are our meditations of? That's going to determine how we operate in this world. There's something He wants us to see. There is a revelation that He wants us to see. Now let's look at it. In Hebrews chapter number 11, verse number 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Esteeming what? The reproaches of Christ. I wouldn't even have thought Moses would have known Him. But I wouldn't have thought Abraham would have known Him. Esteeming the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured seeing. How do you get through that? He endured seeing. Yeah. What did he see? Taskmasters? Slaves? Pain? Suffering? It was all there. He endured as seeing Him who is invisible. There's one thing you don't want to miss that'll make all the difference in the world in your experiences of life. And I want to suggest to you that it is the who that is the Him of all our experiences. That little phrase leaped out at me one day as I was reading through the Scriptures how many times in reference to Christ, that He is the all-important who that is the Him. of everything that has anything to do with God, heaven, or with earth, or you. And He is the one that we are focusing on. He's the revelation that we see in Egypt. He's the revelation. I like what the book of the Revelation begins. The revelation of who? Not of a tribulation. Not of an antichrist. Not of plagues. The revelation of Jesus Christ. If He's the all-important revelation of the revelation, then He's the all-important revelation of Egypt. And I know He was the all-important revelation in Babylon. The king said, I see four men. I thought we'd throw in three. Said we did, but that fourth man's walking around. He made the difference in the fire. But not only is He the one in the book of the Revelation in the end, in Exodus way back there, and He's the who that is the Him of our experiences today. Seeing Him who is invisible. Not seeing our pains and our sufferings. I've done told you that's life, that's reality. We all must go through some phase of it. God has a purpose in our individual lives. He's raising up something, but the heart and soul of it is that we, in the midst of it, are able to see Him who, to this world, is invisible. But not to Moses. Let me look at these verses, but then I want to come back and I want to go into Exodus and see if we can find Him. In Colossians, the Scriptures tell us in chapter 1, verse 15, the Bible said, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature? For by Him were all things created. He is the who that is the Him of creation. Colossians 1:19, for it pleased God that in Him should all the fullness dwell. Same text, there's chapter 1, verse 15. He is the who that is the Him of satisfaction. Colossians 3, verse 4, when Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall we also appear with Him in glory. He's the who that is the Him, not only of creation and satisfaction as far as God is concerned in salvation, but in glorification. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21, who, for He hath made Him to be sin for us, who knew no sin. He's the who that is the Him of salvation. And then I notice in Hebrews 12, verse 2, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. He is the who that is the Him of humiliation and exaltation. He's the center theme of all of these things. 1 Peter 2, verse 9, but ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of Him who hath called you out of darkness into the marvelous light. He is the who that is the Him of adulation and admiration, the one that we should praise. You see, the Bible is not so much a book of how, when, where, and why, though it does contain those factors. But the Bible is a book of who? He's the one that makes the difference. But you see, the truth of the matter is, if you ever get to find out, if you ever get to the who, you will find that He is the how, the when, the where, and the why. He answers all that. But on the other hand, if in the midst of your experiences somehow you think you have found out how, when, where, and why, all it's going to do is confuse you and keep you from really seeing the who in the matter. You get caught up in the circumstances. What, when, where, how, why. And you won't see the who. And religion is filled with all of those previous things. What? When? Where? How? Why? that wasn't going to help anybody in Egypt. I'm going to tell you something, it's not going to help you either, because all of that changes. Go ahead and ask one person what, when, where, how, and why, and then turn around and ask another person what, where, when, how, and why, and you got two answers. Listen to one news channel and you'll get an answer. Listen to another and you'll get another. You know, even going to the doctors. I mean, don't we just hear so many of, you know, what, when, where? We can get an answer from everybody. Boy, if you ever bump into the who, then you don't have to worry about the what, when, how, where, and why. Because He becomes the answer to all of that. And in these extreme situations in Egypt, as in yours, as in the book of the Revelation, as we have noticed, and in all of our experiences, the most important thing is the revelation of Christ. Seeing Jesus in the experience. Seeing Jesus in your world. Seeing Jesus, yes, even being able to see Jesus in Egypt. You said, well, He couldn't have been there. Well, I don't know how Moses knew Him. You explain that to me. You said, well, He couldn't have been in Babylon. Well, I don't know how the king saw Him. Your pastor quoted it. David said, in essence, there's no place that you can go and not find Him if you want to see Him, because he said, if I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art. He said, if I take the wings of the uttermost, or wings of the morning, fly to the uttermost, he found out, He's there. Could it be that if just somehow you could find Him where you're at, that it would make the difference in everything? And it would. Now, let's go here into Egypt, and let me just point out to you where Jesus is seen amazingly. Where Jesus is seen. I want you to look at Exodus chapter number 3 and verse number 14 and see if you can tell me who this is. And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And He said, thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, I am, has sent me unto you. Who is the I am? What did He say? He said, I'm the light of the world. I'm the bread of life. I am the true vine. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. What I'm simply saying is, way back there in Egypt, we can see that truly Jesus is found even in Moses' message. The very first word He brought to them was a word about Christ, the I am. And can I hurriedly emphasize and say, thank God for every sermon, every word, and all the preaching that keeps bringing Jesus up before our eyes and our hearts. the I am. I'm glad that whatever my feelings, whatever my fears, whatever I'm going through, I'm glad that there is a word. There is a book that is filled with truth, but all of it focuses on the who that is the him of whatever I'm going through. And how many times have we come without an answer, without a why, when, what, where, and how? And we sat down in the house of God and the Word of God was opened up, and before our eyes the who was brought to truth and revelation. And when we left, we couldn't have told you any more than what we came with as far as the why, when, where, how, and why. But we knew the who. And we were shouting about it. Somebody said, oh, I was so glad for the Word this morning, because I came back with a greater revelation of the who is the center of my circumstance and my experience. Moses read headlong into the who, and he comes back with a message. Thank God for the message of sufficiency, the I am. The ever eternal, self-existent one, the Jehovah, the Christ, who is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. And though Egypt may come and go, He remains the same. I am. Not I was, not I will be. But where you are at right now, I am. The brother who's in the hospital, he is the I am. Brother Jay with his wife, he is the I am. For me and you, thank God, he is the I am. He's seen in the message. Aren't you glad we can see him so often? Aren't you glad for a pastor like Brother Lester that can so wait before Him to bring you the message, and when you leave, you know that Christ has spoken to you. And you needed Him for what you were going to face. You needed Him for where you were in life. And they didn't need, I'm going to tell you right now, they didn't need a contemporary rock group to come in and go up and down their spines. They didn't need a hamburger or whatever. Or they need a message of the I am. He's seen in the message, the sufficiency of it. Thank God for the preaching that keeps Jesus before our hearts. But then also, as I was looking into the Exodus experience, I realize, or into the Egyptian experience, I realize that He's not only seen, Christ is not only seen in the message, He's seen in the man. Representatively, the man. If you go back, as far back as Joseph, here we have in Egypt a great picture that you cannot miss. They tell us a greater picture and type of Christ than any other individual in the Bible. Over 100 ways. And you've been through them. His brothers hated him. He was sold. He of course, was put in a dark place. And, of course, he was raised up and he was given a name above every name. And, of course, just throughout Joseph's life, he is a representation of the servant aspect of Christ. Look at his attitude. He's a servant. Look at his actions. He is a servant. Everything about him, if you study him, reminds you of Christ the servant. But then we move to Moses, and Moses, when you look at him, you cannot help but see Christ the Son. The son who was despised, the son who was destined, the son who was the deliverer, Moses as Christ brought forth out of Egypt in the devil's own backyard, the children of God. And I'm here to tell you that God's going to get all of His young'uns out of this world.
Yeah.
That's where He saves them, where He cultivates them. Which leads me to say this, not only do I thank God for all the preaching that keeps Jesus before my eyes and heart, but I thank God for all the people that He's worked in and worked through and their experiences that they have come out looking more like Jesus as a result of it. All of the people that through their words and through their actions and through their prayers and whatever, a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, a Sunday school teacher, a song leader, whatever. But when we get around them, we sense and feel the Spirit of Christ. And they draw us closer to Him. And there are many people that do that. But yet, in your life, in my life, there are special people, especially, that do that. Brother John Green, I mentioned him the other night, his wife Marta, who set up her own situation of leaving this world. That was pretty good. I mean, she said, well, just call the young'uns. We'll do it at this time. You pull that out. You read the Bible and you sing. We'll see you. That's pretty good, ain't it? That's pretty good. But I never got around, I can say this without hesitation, I never got around John Green. But what I was not brought face to face with Christ. He just had words that would flow out of him. And he would talk about he could say marvelous. I can't say it like a marvelous grace of God. And I just had him come to the church often, even in his old age, because I love to be around the man, because around that man I was around Christ. He just stirred up Christ in me. It's just like a stirring stick. Oh boy. And it just had a sensation to it. And there have been many of those. I mentioned Betsy Burleson and the different ones along life's journey that God has allowed me to enter into their precious presence. And they have known Christ in a real way, and He, because of their harsh and hard and individual and peculiar experiences, it seemed as though that Christ was seen in a way that I had not seen Him before. Special ways. Special ways. When you can come into a woman's presence filled with God that has lost 7 children, 3 of them in 1 year, all of them over a year old, you know that you're in a special place. And the only thing that delivered her was seeing Him who was invisible, and she would tell you that. And when she bowed to pray, it wasn't like she was praying between here and a place called heaven. It was as if she was sitting there across the table talking to her Lord. She could talk about death as if it was just a fleeting thing. I was just awed. I would go by often and sit and listen. And it seemed as though it had no sting at all for her, because she had felt that sting 7 times. But in the midst of it, she had seen Him who had taken away the power of death from the devil. And he didn't have any more sting. For her, or even for her young'uns. What amazed me, her daughter came to her one day and she was saying, I've been to the doctor, Mom, and he says it's serious and this, that, and the other. And I thought, you know, the average mother would be, she was talking death. I mean, it was serious. And I thought the average mother would be at wit's end. Not her. No. She just looked at her and hugged her and said, honey, don't you worry about that. The Lord's got it taken care of either way. It had no sting to it. And oh, can't you think of Brother Joe? I mean, those people that God has sent into your life in this world, that during your times of burdens and cares, it seemed as though they brought the one to you you needed to see most and needed to be reminded of most. They stirred him up within you and made you want to say, hallelujah, I just saw the Lord. I'm here to tell you that it is such an overwhelming blessing to be able to see God in His message, but also to see Him in the man or the people that God has allowed to come into your life. I'm talking about seeing Christ in this world, in Egypt. But then I would point out to you that Christ is not only seen in the message, His sufficiency. He's not only seen in the man representatively, but I would notice that he is seen in the meal sacrificially. If you go to, of course, Exodus chapter number 12, and there in verse number 8 and verse number 21, He lays out before them what's going to happen that night. And it is called the Passover, and forever thereafter the Passover. And there was that lamb that was selected after being put up. And it was a perfect lamb. And that lamb was sacrificed, and of course its blood, its life's blood, was used in the redeeming processes. And then in the midst of that, there was a meal that was taken place of with the unleavened bread without the impurities of this world in it. But when you began to study all about the Passover, you can't look at that Passover, but what you don't see Christ 100%. All of the setting up of that Passover, as is represented in the Last Supper of Christ, and as was represented in His very death, and even when we have communion, what we're doing is we're reaching all the way back to that cross, which reaches all the way back in time to that Passover, but every bit of it is 100% having to do with the passion and sufferings of Christ. And I don't know about you, but it is not only wonderful when preaching brings Christ to my, stirs Christ up in my heart, and when people stir Christ up in my heart. But you know, when I'm suffering and going through a hard time, it's good for me to realize that the passion of Christ and the suffering of Christ that supersedes any of our suffering, to know that we have not a great high priest which cannot be touched, right, with the feelings of our infirmities, yeah, but was tempted in all manner as we, yet without sin. I'm glad that I can fellowship with Him, so to speak, in that Passover experience, because He's been there and He's done that. He came into this world. He was offered the worst that this world had to offer, and had the least of probably any of us that have ever been in this world. And to realize that He has me on His mind and His heart, and really the reason why He came and did that was for me and for you. To think of that suffering, that heartache, that passion that brought Him the distance, that He would say to His Father, prepare me a body, that He might bring it and offer it as a sacrifice for you and I. And isn't that what we sing about? Isn't that what we worship about? Isn't that what we preach about? It is our strength in this world. So much so that when you're standing by a sink washing your dishes, that unfolding out of that can come His love and His passion, His grace and His mercy that flows out of that Passover for you and for me. Looking into Egypt, would you imagine that you could see so much Jesus? So much of Jesus in the message, in the men, so much of Jesus in the meal. So much of Jesus in the manifestation. Goes back to my verse here verse number 26, talking of Moses, said, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Now, I have no idea how this came about. I know there are those Old Testament manifestations of Christ to where He is seen, as we mentioned, some of those. I don't understand the fullness of it, but all I know is it looks to me like that Moses somehow was introduced and aware of Christ. John chapter number 8, Jesus was speaking to the Pharisees. He said, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day. And he saw it and was glad. Now they got upset. They said to him, thou art yet 50 years old. Hast thou seen Abraham? Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. See, there's nowhere you'll be that he is not. Because he wants to be there with you. He has allowed you to live in this world as his child, to face what the devil, temptations and trials have to offer, simply because that he himself can be there with you. And he said, I will never leave you, nor forsake you. Now, I mentioned last night, and I guess it is pretty difficult, especially when you're laboring in Egypt and sweating, and it seems like no good's coming out of it. You're not going to get a raise, and they want you to do more than you've ever done before. Doesn't that seem like the rat race of this day? Wanting you to work away your worship, take up all your time, but we don't have time to think about the Lord. Go ahead and do this, and they don't have to worry about your religiosity. And keeping you away from your family. It's kind of breaking that up. So you don't have them family traditions that are so religious. Just all they want you, all they care about is how many of these? That's what the world looks at. That's what they brag about. Oh boy, he laid him a good education. Did you see that? And that's all you see. Oh, I'll tell you what, he's got a good business. He works out there day and night, like we're bragging on him for it. My goodness, look at him as he. Oh, I'm telling you, he is so smart. Putting all that together. I'm going to tell you something. You have to do it. I mean, we got to be a part. We got to be in this world. Oh, how wonderful it is to be doing this and seeing Him. Yeah. I said, what are you looking at? Oh, seeing Him who is invisible helps me get through what is visible. The manifestations of where in His presence He shows up for me and you in those difficult hours and in those difficult trials. We see Him in Egypt. He is seen in the message, in the manifestation. Thank God for the presence of Christ that keeps me so close to Him. He's seen in the meal, the passion of Christ. But did you know that Jesus was literally in Egypt? Literally in Egypt. Matthew chapter 2, verse 15, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord, by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. Thank God for the places that Christ has literally come to in this world that keeps Him close to my heart. And to realize that if you are in Egypt, He has been there, but thank God, wherever you're at, He can still be there and will still be there. The who that is the Him in the Egyptian experience, the revelation of Egypt. Not that we would focus on the changing of kings. Have you ever thought about how much money is put into politics? Lord, how many hungry folks would that be? And I'm not just scorning the president, but they said they thought he was going to raise $1 billion. Did anybody else hear that? $1 billion. To become what? Chief. Big king. And Moses turned it down.
Yeah.
Somebody said, I can't believe it. Moses, you're going to turn down you're next in line. They don't even have to vote on it. When daddy's dead, you get the throne. He said, I'm not interested in that throne. He said, I've seen Him who's invisible that sits on the right throne. And I'm not going to be king and be in competition with Him. I'm not interested in that. And He refused that throne. Isn't that something? Somebody said He's crazy. He endured as seeing Him who is invisible. He wasn't looking at thrones and kingdoms and kings and changing predicaments and politics and all even suffering. He was seeing Him. And honey, all of this world, it changes. It changes day by day. And if we're not careful, we'll be caught up in the changes. Even of our physical bodies. You'll be well one day and near death the next. But if it happens, I'm not looking to live 100 years. Because as a 14-year-old boy, I saw Him who is invisible. So that sort of got me ready for the checking out, no matter when it is. And I hope I'm as big a preacher as I'm ever going to get. You pray for me. But this is about the end of the line, I hope, as far as size. Yeah, you're right about that. The who that is the Him. I'm going to tell you, if somehow you could shut down, even in the midst, you can't shut down what you have to do, but if somehow you could focus above and beyond that, and if you could see Him in the place, looking for Him. When is the last time you saw Jesus in somebody? Did you look to find Him there? He may have been there all the time. He may have been in that place. He may have been in that restaurant. He may have been, he may be somewhere right now waiting on you. In the heart of some child of God. When's the last time you've seen Him in His precious Word? When's the last time you've seen Him when you fellowshiped with Him in His suffering and your suffering? When's the last time you saw Him who was invisible. The who that is the Him. If you're not careful, there's a lot of what, when, where, how, and why to be answered, especially in Egypt. But none of that is going to solve the situation. What you've got to have is the who. The who. What is Hebrews 2:9? Hebrews 2:9. Is it? But we see Jesus. I think it's Hebrews 4. If I got this right. Well, Hebrews 12:1-2. Hebrews 12:1-2.
Looking unto Jesus.
And then 11:27. Endured seeing. Seeing. And then Hebrews 4:14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest. Seeing. Well, I'm just wondering what you're saying. I got no good news to give you as far as this old world's concerned. I got no glowing reports that's going to say Egypt's getting better. Have you heard Egypt's getting better? Are you not really? I was talking to somebody that was talking to somebody, and they said they knew somebody close to the king, and they said they think maybe he may be changing his mind. Don't count on it. It ain't getting no better. And they're saying they're coming out with a new way to make bricks that it won't be as hard, and we won't have to do the hard work anymore. It's going to be better. Not in Egypt. And they say that they're sending the taskmasters to a school psychologist where they won't be so harsh. They speak kindly. Yeah, but you're right. No, that's not going to happen in Egypt. And they say they've got, you know, they're making whips now that don't, they sting, but they don't bring blood. What are you looking for in Egypt? You're looking for something in Egypt that's, you know, just, it doesn't hurt. You can just put on that plastic smile and all that other stuff. No, I hate to tell you, it ain't going to change except get worse. Hey, good. That don't sound like good news, does it? Unless you're not looking to Egypt. You're looking to Him who is invisible. And boy, when God's children get to seeing Him despite the Egyptian afflictions and circumstances, that's when He really becomes seen and big. You say, well, preacher, we need a counselor tonight. What do you think about these situations we need to do? Well, the only thing I can tell you is there's some things you have to do, so keep doing them. You got to get up and go to work? Get up and go to work. Let's see if you can find him down on the job. Now, that'll help you when you get down there. If you got to go to the doctor, go to the doctor. But see if you might bump into him somewhere along the way. If you got to sit in the old rocking chair and rocking or can't get up and walk because of the old leg, just sit there. But look around and see if he's showing up. He might want to come by and rock with you. Because he's the who that is the him. And the him that is the who about all of what we go through in this world. If you go through this world seeing Baptists and seeing churchology and seeing religion or seeing Buddha or seeing Hindu or seeing Republicans and seeing Democrats and seeing, you're in bad shape. I'll just tell you that right now. You're in bad shape. But if somehow you can endure seeing him who is invisible, I promise you, you will make it. All right. I've got a painting I couldn't help but buy. I do not collect paintings, but this one I did buy because I could not help myself. Brother Ernie's seen it. It's a pretty good size painting there, the doorway of the shepherd. It's a deep ravine, jagged mountains, both sides. You look way down in there and you can see those sheep. And there's a shepherd down there with them. And what is implied, of course, is the wildness of it, the danger of it, the bears and the wolves and things like that. And over here is a high towering, as I say, rugged contour of a mountain. And you have to look. You have to look. And everybody I show it to, I say, what do you see in that picture? And they'll see the sheep, and they'll see the, you know, a bear. They'll see the wolves. They'll see the shepherd down there. And that it really don't look too good. But if you look just to the right place, the full length of that picture, which is probably about like that, and that mountain comes right down through there, the full length of it, if you look at the jagged rocks, it is a perfect outline of the great shepherd with his staff looking over that mountain, massively protecting the sheep and the under-shepherd. Boy, I'm going to tell you, when you see that, I saw that, I said, woo! I love that. I got to have that. Mama, can I have that? And I like to just go in there. Sometimes when I'm not seeing him too clear. And the ravine is deep. And I can hear the growl of the wolves and sort of see him in the contour of that mountain. And I come away saying, hallelujah. They ain't no match for him. Seeing him where you're at, who is invisible?